And perhaps, Tony, if I combine a little bit of the themes of identity that you both outlined in terms of your personal journeys towards the topic, one of the things that you do in your book is you talk about the different formulations of Britishness and how they work to exclude even from what might be more progressive voices. That might be a good place to sort of start to tease out what makes this topic kind of controversial. Tell us a little bit, if you could, about the sort of the nature of the public discourse.
Yes, indeed. And that, you know, I think I sometimes say to students, and I sort of come clean in the first lesson on a course on refugees and say that, you know, may regard this as an insane position, but I would sort of intellectually argue for open borders. And I say I don't expect anyone else necessarily to agree with that. But the perspective I'll add is that 120 years ago in the world, that was the normal state of affairs. There weren't borders, there weren't passports. There was paperwork that was very irregular and hardly implemented. And we move from that to today, where this issue is at the heart of politics, politics of belonging, politics of bureaucracy, of international relations. And it is incredibly controversial and has all sorts of sensitivities from many different perspectives. I think in my work on Britishness, what I've shown is that there are different models. In some ways, the easiest to chart is those who see the country as a sort of exclusive white nationalist country with a sort of mythological past. And it's not to dismiss the importance and belief in that, but it's a very straightforward, narrow, exclusive vision of Britishness. What I've also explored is how much more progressive voices looking at diversity have an expectation that there can be some difference, but it's got to be difference within limits. And it's still expecting there to be some sort of form of Britishness that is understood without necessarily being clearly articulated. Or when it is articulated, in cliches of fairness, decency, tolerance, which I think any liberal democracy in the world would sign up to. And I think if you sort of do the reverse of saying, well, which country would stand up for intolerance, unfairness, lack of fair play as its key characteristics, I mean, almost as a quip, we could say, well, maybe Trump's America might be proudly doing that, but hopefully that has passed. But it is to show that even within a sort of more liberal inclusivist model, there are some limitations. And what that leads to is some groups sometimes idealized, both in terms of how they have been, how they've been treated, being seen as the good migrant, and then others regarded as the bad migrant, sometimes within the same group. So at the turn of the 20th century, East European Jews coming into Britain in big numbers were regarded, if you like, as the bad Jews, the alien interlopers, as against the established Jewish elite who were regarded as British first, and that in some ways got people out of the bind of being labelled intolerant. Well, I'm not intolerant because I like some Jews and not others. So it's a sort of two forms of Britishness, but in between those, there's ambiguity, which gives space to minorities to function, sometimes on the edges, but also creates a sort of sense of unease in where do they belong and on what terms, and especially as something like Britishness is so vague that it makes it, you know, what are you conforming to?
Now, I would encourage anybody to read the first chapter of your book because I found it incredibly fascinating in terms of the way in which you sketch out that framing around Britishness and the issues that it causes.